The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they're easy, but
we
because they are hard.
Start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting for 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good evening, Space Show listeners. Welcome to the Tuesday night California Time Space Show program. I'm your host, David Livingston. Thank you very much for tuning in. And in just a few minutes, we're going to go to the moon and talk about lava tubes, which we talk about from time to time on the Space Show. But this time we have a very good expert on lava tubes that I met at ISDC. She delivered a great lava tube talk at the moon segment at ISDC. And we're very happy to have her with us. A couple of quick announcements. We're doing the 60-minute format tonight. So please watch the clock. And if you do want to give us a call or send in an email, make sure you do it in time for our 60-minute format. And then no Hotel Mars this week. Mr. Batchelor is traveling. And then we have another Friday show as usual, and Dallas Beanhoff is our guest. Cislunar space will be the topic. And then we have, Sunday as usual. So check out the Sunday Space Show as well. And we're looking forward to that. And look it up on the schedule and see what it's all about. It'll be a surprise for you. Couple of other quick things to note. Our telephone number, if you would like to call us, is 1-866-687-7223. And remember, we are a talk show, so we do want you to talk before we want you to send emails. So again, 1-866-687-7223. If you do need to use email instead, it is drspace@thespaceshow.com. Then you can also post comments on our blog, and you do that by going to our website. All the way to the far right for the upcoming show menu. This is the first show listed. Open that page up. It's also our blog and archive page, and you'll find comments down at the bottom. Remember, you do not have to log into our comment program. You can do it as a guest. But one more time for the toll-free line, 1-866-687-7223. And then remember, do visit our website, thespaceshow.com, the full website newsletter is posted there, and check and see all the programs we have planned between now and the end of the year, and that list is filling up. If you have guest suggestions for us, please send them in, and I'll do my best to get them on board for 2019. Everything we do is archived. You can listen right off of our website or quickly download a show. We do have a store. If you're interested in Space Show t-shirts and things of that nature with our logo on it, just look on the website for Pepper, listening to the Space Show, and she will guide you to our Cafe Press store. If you have any questions, of course, don't hesitate to ask me. Upper button on the left menu tells you how to listen to a live broadcast like we're doing now, podcast, including Alexa, and some of those podcast players are embedded on our website, by the way, and then also MP3 archives as archives just standalone on our website. If you have any questions about any of this, please don't hesitate to get a hold of me. And then remember, again, we are a nonprofit 501c3 radio show with OneGiantLeapFoundation.org. We are listener-supported, which means we're able to bring you these programs because many of you do financially donate and help support the Space Show. If you're a U.S. federal taxpayer, you get a tax deduction for your gift. And if you're a California taxpayer, you also get a tax deduction. And OneGiantLeapFoundation.org is our 501c3 nonprofit parent. Visit that site. But if you have any questions, just email me. That's always the best way to reach me. DrSpace@thespaceshow.com. On our homepage, center right, you'll see the big PayPal button. That tells you how to support us with PayPal. Also, how to send a check if you don't want to do so electronically. And then, as I say each week, you'll see the big Amazon button in the middle of the homepage. And that's because we have two nonprofit programs with Amazon, where if you just do normal Amazon shopping, Amazon donates a portion of your purchase price to One Giant Leap, the space show. So if you check out that big Amazon button, it will explain both of the programs that we have with Amazon. And hopefully you will use it. It's a nice way to support the space show while you just do your normal, typical Amazon shopping, assuming you do buy things from Amazon. And we appreciate that very much. Then remember, also, listeners, we do have sponsors. As this is a 60-minute format show, I'm only going to read the name of the sponsors and give a shout-out to each one of them. But they do have those banner ads going across our homepage, and they can change the banner ads as often as they want. If you want to be a sponsor, email me. We only have limited numbers because sponsors take up talk time, and we don't want to do too much of that. So if you're interested in being a sponsor, send me a note at drspace@thespaceshow.com. And we want to thank Northrop Grumman, the Space Foundation, AIAA, Moonwords, the Space Development Network, Celestis, the National Space Society, and the Space Plan. And we would not be doing the space show without the terrific support of these sponsors. So we thank them very, very much and appreciate that. So we have a very special guest with us tonight for 1 hour. Again, I told you I met her at ISDC on the moon agenda. I guess that's what I'll call it. It was the moon track ran every day of ISDC that Madhu had put together. And our guest, and hopefully I will pronounce her name correctly, and if not, I guess you all can scold me. Dr. Anahita is her first name, and then Modersari is her last name. I hope I did that at least close enough to count. And thank you. And she did a great presentation on lava tubes, and the audience was spellbound. And we talk lava tubes from time to time on the space show with other guests and people who want to have habitats on the moon. Every time I do a Habitat on the Moon show, someone always says, well, what about lava tubes? Can we live in lava tubes? So I know there's interest in them. This is the first time we've done a standalone program about lava tubes. Read her full bio on the website. It's very impressive with her academic work as well as her papers and her other work. And it is updated and current. But we're going to talk with our guest for an hour, not read about her. Anahita, welcome to the space show. How are you tonight?
I'm good. Thank you, David. Thank you for inviting and having me on the show. And I should also mention that it was my first time attending the ISDC conference, and I'm very pleased to attend the conference and get the chance to know people like you, and Maggie was the moderator of the moon session.
Do you think you would go to another ISDC?
So, I mean, the direction of my career has changed a little bit, so I really hope that I can do it, but I'm not sure actually at this moment.
I guess we'll start out and ask you what a lava tube really is, but maybe even before that, you know, that's sort of an esoteric kind of interest, I think. Why or what gave you your focus on lava tubes?
Yeah, so if I want to give you a little background, I mean, a little information about my background. So I got my bachelor and master in mining engineering with a focus on rock mechanics. And then I came to the States to do my PhD in civil geomechanical engineering, which I did at Purdue University. So at the time that I was finishing my PhD, there was like this internal grant competition at Purdue by the provost office, and they were asking the faculty to submit their proposals for this two-year internal grant. At that time, my advisor, which I want to also mention his name, Professor Antonio Bobet, he and Professor Jay Milosh, he is very well known in the planetary science, and also two other professors in civil structural engineering. They come up with the idea to have this new research program at Purdue University, which was named Resilient Extraterrestrial Habitat. So at that time, I was given this offer to pursue my education and to use my knowledge and background in geomechanical engineering in this new field for me, which was especially focused on the stability of the lava tubes. So in this research program, they needed some people, of course, a student postdoc with background in civil structural engineering to looking into the resilient like habitat system. But on the other hand, they also wanted some people with expertise in geomechanical engineering to look into lava tubes, which was the new idea of this program, to have the habitat systems inside the lava tubes. And why geomechanical engineers? Because in geomechanical engineering, we deal a lot with tunneling and underground construction. And if you look into lava tubes, they are basically these natural tunnels that they exist even here on Earth. So that was a great opportunity for me to use my knowledge in this new field.
What exactly is a lava tube? Does it get its name lava because it flowed with volcanic lava or something like that? Or what's the origin of the lava tubes?
Yeah, exactly. So as the lava is flowing on the surface, on the ground, so because of the temperature differences, the outer surface of these lava just starts to drop in temperature, it cools down, and it forms a crust. And gradually, this crust gets thicker and thicker. But there's still the hot lava underneath that. It still flows away, and it drains out. So it leaves like a conduit, an empty opening. That's why they are called the lava tubes. So because they have the origin of the eruption of the magma and then the lava that is flowing underground. We have seen these lava tubes, and if you go around the states, they exist on Earth. But the sizes that we talk about, like for the terrestrial lava tubes, are in the order of like 30 meter wide.
If you touched a lava tube on the moon, what would it feel like? Is it hard surface? Is it smooth like glass? What would it feel like if you were actually handling it?
So because the surrounding of these lava tubes are basically the material from the eruption, which are the basaltic materials. These are the basaltic rock. So it's like very... It's not as smooth. It has like a texture of the basaltic material. It's not like glass material, no. It's very hard material.
So people claim that they can live in them and I guess seal up the ends, and they make a perfect under the ground home for all sorts of purposes for the moon and maybe also on Mars. Is that a valid use for a lava tube? Can you seal it off and turn it into your apartment on the moon?
Yeah, so again, if we look at the idea of the extraterrestrial habitats that are offered by NASA or space agencies, they are mostly talking about the surface habitat systems like domes. But if we look into the detail and if they are really feasible, we can see that these surface extraterrestrial habitats, they are exposed to different kinds of hazards. These hazards can be like the radiation. They can be temperature fluctuations. or direct meteorite impact or seismic activity. But now if we look into the lava tubes, because they are underground structures, they can be immediate shelters against the surface hazard. So if you want, I want to explain more into the detail about that. For example, if we look into the radiation, for the surface habitat, we need to have a high thickness of material, for example, the regolith, about like 20 meters thick to be safe against the radiation for the astronauts. But now, because for the lava tubes, we have multiple meters of these basaltic rock on top, so we don't need any additional materials to be safe against these radiation. Now, if we talk about the temperature fluctuations, on the surface of the moon, this temperature can vary from like 400 Kelvin to 100 Kelvin, which is a lot daily. Now, inside the lava tube, this temperature, especially if we are far from the entrance of these lava tubes, the temperature can remain constant at about like minus 20 degrees Celsius. And then they can maintain, if they are maintained by the internal heat, then they can be safe, I mean, good shelters against this temperature variation. Then the other thing is the dust on the surface of the moon. We have like these problems regarding the regolith dust, but now inside the lava tube, we are free from the intrusion of these regolith dust. So speaking of all these kinds of hazards, we can say that the lava tubes are really a good option of habitat systems that we can have on the moon or Mars.
Can you, how easy is it to seal off a lava tube and pressurize it? And I'm also trying to get my grasp around the size of it. So if we compared a lava tube to the being inside a wide body jet, like a jumbo jet, are we talking similar sizes or very different sizes in terms of diameter and how much space would be in the lava tube?
So if it's okay, I want to more specifically talk about the physical evidence of these lunar lava tubes first, and then I can answer your question. So about the physical evidence of these lunar lava tubes, we have about three or four sources of information. The first thing is about the photography, I mean the topography of the moon and the images that we took from the surface of the moon. So these images, they show that there are some sinus rills on the surface of the moon that they actually showed the path of the lava that flew on the surface. And then along these sinus rills, there are some vertical holes that we call them a skylight. Now, with these images taken from the surface of the moon, we can see that underneath these skylights, there are some empty openings. They can be related to the existence of the lava tubes because they are very close to the eruptions and volcanic areas. So now the size of these skylights, the diameter of those skylights are in the order of like 50 to 100 meters. Now the second source of information that we have on the moon is the gravity data, which is done by Grail Mission. And actually, Professor Jay Milosh at Purdue University has helped a lot regarding looking into these gravity measurements. So what they did is that they look on the surface of the moon. They actually found the location of these skylights. So, for example, one of the very well-known skylights on the moon is called Marius Hill Skylight. Now, very close to that Marius Hill Skylight, they did the gravity measurement. So what they did, they looked at the mass deficits and mass surpluses. And the interesting thing that they found is that next to that Mario Sila skylight, there was the elongation of the mass deficits. And if we look at the size of that, the length is in the order of like hundreds of kilometers, and the width of that mass deficit area is like 1 to 2 kilometers. Now, the third source of information is by the JAXA, the Japanese Space Agency. They look at the lunar radar sounder and the echo pattern, and what they found is that especially at the locations that we saw the mass deficit by the gray emission, they could see by the echo pattern the existence of these empty openings under the surface of the moon. So they matched the location of these echo patterns matched with the location of mass deficit. But the size of the lava tubes that they estimated with this method was about like 300 meters. Now, the last source of the information that we have is by European Space Agency. They look into the morphological analysis of the collapses, which I mean the skylights and the pit chains. And what they did is actually they correlated the size of these collapses with the size of the lava tube. And if the size of a lava tube on Earth is maximum like 30 meter wide in diameter, on Mars is like 100 to 800 meters, and then on Moon is like 800 to 1500 meters. So again, in the order of the data that we found with the gray emission, so the size of these lunar lava tubes can be in the order of like 1 to 2 kilometers. Now, going back to your question, if they are really in this huge size, they are not easy to be pressurized. But on the other hand, we hope that these lava tubes are in this size because then we can have habitat systems like in the size of the cities. And we have like a very interesting schematic figure that we fit like the, for example, the Philadelphia city inside the lunar lava tube. So I mean, if they are really huge in diameter, then we can have these habitat systems. But then, of course, it's not easy. The problem of pressurizing these lava tubes is not solved yet. But again, the first question for us is, do they really exist in this big sizes in diameter or no?
Do you seal off, if you wanted to use them for a habitat, do you seal off the openings, or how does that work?
You mean the skylight?
I guess the skylights, those are the openings.
Yes.
So you'd have to seal those off if you were going to be inside it, right?
Yeah. So actually, yeah, these skylights, they have been observed on the surface of the moon and with the images. A good number of them have been observed on the moon. The other interesting thing that we did in the REST research group is that we really wanted to know what the size of the lava tube could be independent from all these direct measurements that I just mentioned. So what we did is actually we look at the two analytical methods. One of them was the flow characteristics of the lava. So we look at the literature and, for example, the density of the lava, all these geometry and material properties of the lunar lava flows. And at the end, we came up with the estimated maximum eruption rate on the moon. And then assuming like the velocity of the lava tube, of the lava flow on the moon, we came up with the estimated cross section, which could be in the order of like 1 kilometer wide. The other thing was, again, we looked at all the skylights that have been observed on the moon to see if we can correlate the size of these skylights, which are actually collapses, the roof collapses of these lava tubes, to correlate their size with the size and diameter of the lava tube. So, yes, we look at least like four of those skylights, and we found that if these skylights and heat chains, they can be like in the order of like 800 meter wide in diameter. The size of the lava tube, of course, can be in the order of like 1 to 2 kilometer. So a good number of these skylights have been observed that actually helped us to do these parts of our research.
I have a listener email for you. It's from Todd, who is in San Diego. And he said, if you were planning the first or maybe an early settlement mission to the moon, would you choose a habitat in a lava tube or on the surface of the moon?
So if we are in a state that we are sure that these lava tubes with these sizes exist on the moon, then of course, because of all the reasons that I mentioned regarding the shelter that we can have against those surface hazards, then the lava tube would be the first option for the habitat system for me.
But we're not there with certainty yet, is that correct?
So we know that they exist, but the size of them to be like still 1 to 2 kilometer wide, it's some sort of information that we need to do more direct measurements. So I guess now there are some proposals for NASA to do some direct measurements, like with the geophysical method near the surface of the moon. Or when I go to these space conferences, I see that some researchers are working on the rovers that they can actually walk on the wall of the skylight, and at the end, they might go deep into the lava tube to have an estimate of the size of them. So we know that they exist, but are they really in the order of kilometer? It's something that we need more information about that.
Karen is listening in Seattle. And she says, I'm not clear on how far under the ground a lava tube is. So are they just below the surface, or are they meters or more than meters below the surface?
That's actually a good question. So I mentioned about the gray emission and the gravity measurements that have been done with the gray emission. So the problem with that method is that we cannot have an idea of the depth of these lava tubes. But there are some other methods. For example, if we just look at the images of the skylight, the roof thickness of these skylights is in the order of like 100 meter. Also, if we look at the data from the lunar radar sounder that I mentioned is collected with the JAXA, they also come up with the same number, that the roof thickness above this lava tube can be in the order of like 70 to 100 meters. So these are the numbers that we are dealing with. And on the other hand, if we look at the size of the lava tubes and we assume that they are 1 to 2 kilometer wide, some of the analysis that we have done regarding the stability of the lava tube, this is the roof thickness that we require to maintain the stability. And we know that these lava tubes have been there for millions, or on the moon for billions of years. So they are stable. So they should have this thickness of material on top of them.
Can we tell if there is anything in the lava tubes? For example, just thinking science fiction for a moment, could we tell that they've been used for something or by something in the past?
So if something exists. I want to talk about like some minerals or organisms that might exist actually inside the lava tube, because we know that the lava, like even on Earth near these volcanic vents, they are actually a good source of nutrition for organisms. And also, I mentioned about the constant temperature inside the lava tube. And if they can be maintained by internal heat, we can think that even they can produce liquid water inside them. But again, these are not things that so far we have so much information about.
Here's another question for you. Alex is in Denver, Colorado, and he said if astronauts were on the moon trying to do something for an early space colony or space habitat structure, would they be able to drill into or cut or somehow do some engineering or carpentry or something with a lava tube, or is the substance something that you couldn't penetrate?
So again, the material surrounding the lava tube should be basaltic material, and we don't think the composition of these materials should be that different from what we see here on Earth. So regarding the strength of the materials, they should be almost the same. So we have to penetrate into this material. But on Moon, because of the partial gravity, everything is different. I'm not sure. We are still in that stage that we can say we have the knowledge and the tools to do mining and penetration on the Moon. If you are talking about this, the material by itself, it's doable. But because of the environmental situation of the moon, I don't think we have the knowledge yet.
Where are these located here on Earth? Can anybody go to where they're located, or are they in really remote, weird places? Where are they?
No, actually, there are a good number of the lava tubes on Earth that the largest lava tubes on Earth are in Hawaii. So actually in the REST research group, we wanted to visit some of these lava tubes. The first objective of this trip to the lava tube for us was to do some imaging and reconstruct a lava tube. So in the future, we can show, like schematically, the idea of building habitat systems inside these lava tubes. But we, at that time, we didn't choose Hawaii because of all the eruptions that was occurring. But then we, like I said, there are a good number of lava tubes on Earth. Like they are in Arizona, in New Mexico, in California. So the place that we chose was the Lava Bed National Monument in Northern California, which is like in the border of Oregon. So we went there, like there are lots of, they call it caves, but we want to say lava tube because there are like tunnels. And one dimension of these feature is much bigger than the other two dimensions. But for the cave or cavern, the three dimension of the feature should be in the same order. So we have this tendency to call them lava tube and not to call them cave. So, yeah, speaking of the Lava Bed National Monument, there were lots of these lava tubes inside the park. At the end, we chose, like, three of them. And that was a very interesting trip for us because we spent, like, 5 days in that region. Every day we went inside the lava tube for like 4 to 5 hours. And what we did, we like 3D imaged and reconstructed this model of the rubber tube, and also as geomechanical engineers, we look at the materials and the strength of these materials because we wanted to have some sort of information about the material properties, the geomechanical properties that we need to have in our model to study the stability of the rubber tubes.
Did you, so you went to the ones in Northern California, correct?
Yes. Yes.
That's up near Mount Shasta in the glacier, am I right?
Sorry, I'm not sure exactly who you're talking about, but it's in near Oregon, like I said.
Right.
So
you were near the lake. You were at Shasta Lake, correct?
Yeah, right.
There's a really beautiful lake with the red rocks all around it. It's really gorgeous. You have a phone call. Are you ready for this?
Sure.
Hang on. Hi, caller. Welcome to the space show. Thank you for calling. And who are you and where are you?
This is Marshall.
Hi, Marshall.
I've always had a fascination for building colonies in the lava tubes. One of the questions I have, and you kind of talked about it earlier, is that you think that the materials that make up the walls of the lava tube, both on Mars and on the Moon, would basically have the same consistency of what we have on Earth?
So we don't think that there should be like that different from the materials that we see on Earth.
Okay. Permeability and porosity of the rock would kind of say that you can't just go in and block off a lava tube, pump it full of air, and expect to live there because the air would literally slowly leak through the rock, wouldn't it?
So, speaking of the terrestrial lava tubes, that's correct. There are, like, the porosity and the permeability of the material is too high. And I was mentioning that we had a trip to the lava tube, and we could really feel the moist inside the lava tube because of the high porosity rate.
Water would actually come through real easy.
Yes, but we don't have the same situation and environment on the Moon. So we don't think that we will have the same amount of porosity on the Moon.
Yeah, so basically the walls would have to be sealed with something or other to keep the air in. And you earlier said something about the temperature. I would presume you'd also have to engineer some kind of insulation to keep the heat in.
Right, but like I mentioned, we don't think that the porosity rate of the basaltic material on the Moon would be the same number as what we see on Earth. And also because we don't have that much of water on the Moon, so that shouldn't be a huge problem compared to what we see here on Earth.
The other thing that I always found interesting is I remember reading a long time ago something about going up into the certain lava tubes, and they would literally be plugged with ice because the mountain is, you know, fairly high and the ground is cold, and they slowly accumulated water. And I was thinking that lunar and Martian lava tubes probably would contain water also.
So, like I said, inside the lava tube, the temperature can be constant. We think that so far the temperature is about like minus 20 degrees Celsius.
Mm-hmm.
And by maintaining this internal heat, they might persist the existence of liquid water. But we don't think that they are like in the form of ice. And here on Earth, there are some lava tubes with ice, but then there are lots of them that they actually do not include the ice material. So we can feel them moist, like I said, but they are not icy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, yeah, there's a bunch of them on Hawaii. I doubt if they'd ever get icy there.
Right.
Anyway, thank you for the info.
Hey Marshall, does Oklahoma have any lava tubes?
Well, out west of Alva, there is Faulkner's Cave, which is kind of snaky, like a lava tube. But it wasn't made by lava, it was made by water. So there's similar caves, but none of them caused by lava, because as far as I know, the last volcano in Oklahoma was down by Lawton, and the mountains down there, the Arbuckles.
Right.
And, there was one down there, probably 50 to 100 million years ago, but nothing recently.
That's the oldest mountain chain in the country.
Oh, the Arbuckles?
Yeah, I think they're the oldest ones in the country.
Well, that's a factoid I didn't know.
Well, check it out. I could be wrong. I'm trying to remember my childhood Oklahoma history from grade school.
I don't even trust my grade school teachers. They were all wrong.
Well, I don't know, but I think I remember we made a field trip to the Arbuckles, and something tells me they were teaching us that this is the oldest mountain range in the country, but maybe they just mean in Oklahoma. Maybe my memory might be short. I'll require you for open lines on the next time to set us straight on that, okay? That's your homework.
Yes, sir.
That's
bye-bye.
Your homework. Thank you, Marshall. Listeners, he has freed up the phone line. If you would like to call us, 1-866-687-7223, and also email drspace@thespaceshow.com. I have another question from Ben. Ben is in Phoenix, and he says, is there any kind of real significant difference between a Martian and a moon lava tube?
Regarding the Martian lava tubes, we don't have that much of information about the physical evidence of those lava tubes, except for the existence of the skylight. The same thing that we see on the moon, the existence of the skylight have been observed on the Mars topography. So the size of these lava tubes, they seem to be different. Like I mentioned, on Mars, they are in the order of maybe 100 to 800 meter in diameter, and on Moon it's like 800 to 1500 meter. That's the only difference.
Why would they be bigger on the Moon than on Mars?
So I guess it depends on the eruption rate that we see on the Moon. They might be larger eruption or higher eruption rate on the moon, and also the fact that the gravity affects how this lava is flowing on the surface of the moon or Mars, that all affects the size of these lava tubes.
Penny is in Kansas City, and she says, I believe there are probably moonquakes or other issues that happen on the surface of the moon. So my question is, for the lunar lava tubes, how stable are they? Can they withstand serious moonquakes, or as we would say, earthquakes, or do they crack and split? How stable are these items?
That's a good question. So if it's okay again, I'm going to answer this question in a broader way.
Hold on just a minute. Caller, turn your computer speakers off and listen only through the telephone, because your feedback is coming into the show. And I've got
Is it okay now?
No, it's not you. It's the caller. I've got a caller on hold. And I've got his or her microphone muted down because of the feedback. But listen only off of the phone, not through the computer, because they're out of phase and you'll get confused. Okay, so Penny asked you the question about stability.
Right. So in our research group, after we somehow wanted to answer the size of these lunar lava tubes, and we found that they might really exist in the order of like 1 to 2 kilometers wide. The next question for us was regarding the stability of these lava tubes. The first step for us was to look into the stability of the lava tubes in a static conditions, which I mean only because of the gravity. So what we did is that, okay, we have these lava tubes. They might be very large. So now, because of the gravity, the question is, can they be really structurally stable or not? So we have done some numerical analysis, which are for now some 2D analysis. So we modeled the lava tube in a 2D case, and then we have all the lunar gravity, the material properties that we assume, again, it's basaltic material. And like I mentioned before, we visited those lava tubes in Lava Beds National Monument to have an idea of the geomechanical properties of these materials. And then we input them into our models, and then we look into the gravity, and we see where are the failures around these lava tubes. For this purpose, we look into different sizes of the lava tubes and also different roof thickness. So the parameters that are changing in our models are the size, the roof thickness, and the material property. And at the end, we came up with like a table that shows us, okay, for in a static condition, for this size of the lava tube, now this is the minimum roof thickness that we require for the stability. For example, for the case of 1 to 2 kilometer wide lava tube, we at least need like a 100 meter roof thickness for the stability. And this roof thickness is again the number that we see in the thickness of the skylet, in the roof thickness along the wall of the skylet. But after answering this question, which was basically in a static condition, now like the current question that you just mentioned, the next step for us to do this analysis in dynamic condition, which I mean that assuming that we have like some seismic activities that can be even from a far-field meteorite impact. Now the question is, can they be really structurally stable or not? So this research is still ongoing. So the thing that we have started looking into is first to model these meteorite impacts, these far-field meteorite impacts. For that, we are using like some shock physics code with like hypervelocity meteorite impact and like far from the damage zone, we look into the deformation that is induced into the ground because of those far field meteorite impacts that are actually the seismic motions. Now, after we come up with these numbers with the deformations, because of these seismic activities, now we input them into our original numerical models. And what we are looking into right now is how these seismic activities would affect the stability of the lava tube for a case that was stable in a static condition. What would happen now with these dynamic conditions? These are something that we are working on, but now again, looking into the lava tube in reality, we know that they really exist on the moon and they have been there for billions of years, even at the time that there were like meteorite bombardments. Even though some of the skylights that we see they might form when the lava tube is gradually forming or because of the impacts of these meteorites. But in overall, they seem to be very like solid structures.
You have a phone call on hold. Are you ready to take the call?
Sure.
Okay. Hi, caller. Welcome to the Space Show. Who are you and where are you, please?
Hi, David. This is Gene in Pasadena.
Hi, Gene. How are you?
Good, good, good. This is a, you know, this is a topic I've been kind of following just around the edges for a long, long time. And I have two questions about the research that she's doing. I understand how the lava tubes are formed when the lava flows up from the core of the eruption and, you know, flows across the surface, and then the upper level of that flow solidifies, and then the lava slowly drains out. Well, my question is, I can understand why it drains out onto the surface, but down in the origin, is there a longer passageway of this still hot lava that continues on down to the sort of the heart of the volcano? And does in normal conditions, even on Earth, when that lava stops flowing, is there a depression there, or does the lava sort of pull back and you end up with a what essentially would be a kind of a downward flowing lava tube that might end at the top of whatever lava was left at the bottom of this pool? And if that sort of plug at the end would still conduct heat from the core of the lava tube. I mean, from not the lava tube, but from the core of the volcano. Mike, what I'm getting at is I wanted to see if there was, after the flow finished and the lava tube was formed, if there might be continuous heat coming up to sort of the lower end of the floor of the volcano from the perhaps the still active lava far, far, far below the surface, below the lava tube itself.
Thanks for asking this question. I should mention that these are not like the areas of my expertise because, like, as geomechanical engineer, we are assuming that these lava tubes exist, and now we are looking into, like, for example, their size or their structural stability. But based on the studies that I have done, I can see that these lava tubes, some of them, they might have like a lobe pattern, so they might be divided into different like patterns and paths. And then the other thing is that I have seen that even though in the case that we visited the lunar lava tube, I mean the lava bed National Monument lava tube in California, we see that at the end, after like kilometers in length, they got stuck, which means that the lava flow has stopped. So I don't think that this lava would move back, especially because of the slope on the ground. But that's all the information that I can provide for now. Again, speaking of my background in this research.
Okay, I appreciate that. The second thing was the work that you're doing, you and your group are doing now, is that funded by NASA or is there another funding source?
So for 2 years, it was like the internal funding from like Purdue University, but now starting this fall, the REST research group is funded for 5 years by NASA.
Oh, very good. That shows they're interested. Good. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's all the question I have. Thank you very much. This has been
informative.
Thank you.
Talk so far. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Gene. I appreciate your call. Listeners, there is still about 5.5 minutes if you would like to give us a call, because, again, we're on the 60-minute format. 1-866-687-7223. And email remains drspace@thespaceshow.com if you want to get a quick email or a quick call in. And do you believe, Anahita, that when we start actually spending time on the moon, be they a permanent settlement or maybe there for a certain amount of time and rotating crews and things like that. Do you believe that we will be utilizing the lava tubes, or will we be building or developing surface structures or something else? Will we be making use of the lava tubes for habitats?
If you ask me, I don't think we are that far from building like these habitat systems, yeah, inside the lava tubes. Especially, I just don't want to focus on the research that we are doing. I see, like worldwide, there are a lot of researchers that are working on the habitat systems inside the lava tubes. I saw a research group in Iceland, and I mean, they are going to live inside the lava tube in Iceland for like a couple of months to look into even the psychological parameters that they need to take into account if they want to live inside the lava tube. So actually, I don't think that's something that it's not going to happen in the future. We shouldn't be that far from that.
You have another caller on hold, and hang on. Hi, caller. Welcome to the Space Show. Who are you and where are you, please?
This is John in Reddick. How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Oh, doing fine. I want to let you know that there's a lava tube in Lassen called Subway Cave. It's just north of the main entrance, about, I don't know, 15 miles.
Right.
So I want to. Had you been there? I was wondering if you'd actually seen that.
If you ask me, no.
No, but I mean, yeah, I was wondering if David had seen it.
Oh, yeah, I've been by it in the area. Isn't that near where Shasta is and the glaciers and all of that? Isn't that in the same general area?
The Shasta Lake I know of is just about 20 miles north of Redding. This is more, this is by Lassen, which is, again, about 50 miles to the east. Actually, I guess it would be 65 miles, because it's, 50 miles north of Lassen is about 50 to Lassen. So, but this one's over by, to the east, not by Shasta Lake.
Okay. So
there's a cave there, yeah.
Go ahead with your question or comment for our guest.
Sure. Well, a couple things. Has anybody tried to model how tubes might be made in 1/6G and in particular conditions?
Sorry, I cannot hear.
She couldn't hear you. Can you repeat it again, John?
Has anybody tried to model how lava tubes would be formed on the moon in the low gravity and extreme temperatures?
The other part of the research that we are actually working on. But
it's
processing, yeah.
Okay, now here's the other, are you considering how the crystal structure of basalt might change under those conditions as well?
You mean the thermal conditions?
Yeah, I was just wondering, does the rock change?
Yeah.
In the rock formation, the way the rock does actually solidify, I guess is the best way to describe it, in lunar conditions, does it change the crystalline structure at all? I mean, is there more space between the crystals? So because of the lower gravity, or do we know?
I'm not sure, regarding the question, what the answer would be. But if you ask what we are doing so far in our research, in our models, is that we assume so far that we have, a continuous material. We do not consider the discontinuities because of the existence of these crystals, but what we do is that we just decrease some of the strength parameters of the material, for example, because of the existence of these cracks that are forming during the thermal phases, different phases that we have when these lava tubes are forming. So we take into account those parameters by changing these continuous materials. For example, the tensile strength of the material, we know that it should be smaller because of the existence of these crystals or cracks, and we do it in our models. But in future, what we want to do is, again, to have these continuous materials and models to take into account the parameters that you just mentioned.
Right, right. Okay. And now, thirdly, are you going to try to find a method of surveying the surface of the moon for maybe hidden latitudes so that you can bore into them? And then you don't have to, you can manage your skylight much better, and you could control the construction of the lava tube, the habitat.
Like you said, I think we have good information about the locations of these skylights on the moon. And so far, these are the entrances to the lunar lava tubes for us. So we actually consider them.
Right, right. I'm just saying that wouldn't it be better if you could find one that didn't have a skylight that you could drill into and have then control the construction of your... You could have a prefab plug to put in a hole you bore into the lava tube.
Yeah. Maybe, because then it shows that we have like a solid structure if we don't have these skylights, but I'm not sure if it's the easiest and fastest way to make sure that lava tube really exists. Because so far the existence of these skylights has helped a lot to make sure that these lava tubes really exist on the moon.
Right, right. Well, that's the other thing. You know how they bore, they use that boring equipment in Cooper Pedy for the coal mine in Australia?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not...
So you could bore your own lava tube if you wanted. I mean, I'm not sure how difficult that would be, but I mean, you could build a suit, so to say.
I think we're a long way from that, John.
Yeah, I don't know. I like the idea of using lava tubes, on the moon and Mars, and I just thought maybe. And it sounds like these are areas you need to research. So
okay.
But, okay. Well,
I appreciate the call.
Thank you. And thanks for all you do, David.
Thank you, John. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, bye-bye.
Anahita, we're over the 60-minute mark.
Right.
What should we have talked about that we haven't covered yet? Have we left anything out that you think we should have talked about or covered?
No, I would say we covered all the things that I wanted to mention regarding what we are doing really in this research. The only thing is that I talked about the trip that we had to the Lava Beds National Monument. I had an interview with the Purdue University about this trip. I can, David, provide you the link, and if we can just upload it on the website.
I can
great.
Do that, or you can put it on the blog yourself, or just send it to me and I'll do
sure.
it.
Sure.
Because the blog page already exists for the show.
Okay.
And I will archive the program tonight. I don't think I'll get to the written summary, but I'll do that tomorrow and hope that I have electric power tomorrow. I just got notices that they're cutting off power now to parts of Sonoma County, so we'll see what happens in my part. But we'll get this show posted up tonight, at least on podcasting and on the archives, and then the summary will follow in the morning. But, yeah, send me whatever you want me to upload, and I will do that, or you can do it either way, whatever works easier for you.
Sure. Good. Okay. Other than that, thank you, David, again, for having me on the show.
A lot of good pleasure, and I'm sure we'll probably talk to you some more about lava tubes down the road as more and more information is learned about them. But we thank you for being with us and really appreciate it. And
sure.
Listeners, thank you for your phone calls and your emails. Everybody have a great rest of the evening, and good night from Anahita, David, and the Space Show.
Good night. Thank you. Bye-bye.